91.3 KXCI Tucson. Real people, real radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today on our community radio station, 91.3 KXCI. Have you all noticed that it's cooling down in Tucson? What a long, hot summer it's been. This is Aspen Green with my co-host, Kathy Harris, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. And you can hear more of our programs by going to kxci.org and looking on our Broad Perspectives radio page. Today, we have a dear friend, Karen Falkenstrom. Perhaps you know her as our local taiko artist. She's known in the schools as Lee Sensei, which sounds like a ninja character in anime, if you ask me. But there is much more to Karen's Tucson legacy. Karen is involved in many things and is definitely a person who creates community. I have seen her play on stage at the University of Arizona for an Arts Express workshop a few years back. She is fun, interesting, and her love for her craft is evident. I'm so happy to learn more about her, Kathy.
I'm so excited to have her. You know, Karen's one of those people that we've known for a while, but at least for me, I didn't know about all the things she's done before in our community and the arts community. So I'm very excited to talk to her today. Karen Falkenstrom received an MFA from the U of A Creative Writing Program in 1991. Over the next decade, she served as director of the Tucson Poetry Festival, event coordinator at the U of A Poetry Center, and she co-founded Core Press, as well as In Concert Tucson. In 2002, she co-founded Odaiko Sonora, Tucson's Japanese ensemble drumming group, and later established Rhythm Industry Performance Factory, Arizona's only artist-owned performing arts incubator space. I love that term, incubator space. Karen is also known as one of North America's top builders of the wine barrel taiko drums. Honors include a 2008 YWCA Woman on the Move Award and a 2009 Arizona Arts Award. She's currently a performer and teaching artist. Karen, welcome to Broad Perspectives.
Thank you so much, Kathy and Aspen. I'm kind of like a little bit red from all the accolades, but
well, you deserve them and probably more, I'm sure. You know, you've done so much for the arts in Tucson. I hardly know where to start, but let's begin where we begin with almost all of our guests. Tell us if you are from Tucson originally, or if not, where are you from and how did you end up here?
Well, I'm originally from Virginia. I grew up in Northern Virginia, where there's virtually no accent because we all want to speak like people from politicos and newscasters from the DC area. I ended up going to University of Virginia and studying architectural design. I always wanted to be a writer ever since elementary school. So along with studying architectural classes, I took a lot of poetry writing. Eventually, I had an opportunity to move out to Tucson. I applied to the MFA program at the University of Arizona, which was really a very highly thought of and respected writing program. So in 1989, I moved out here with my Volvo, packed to the gills, started my career there at the University of Arizona Master of Fine Arts program in creative writing.
All right, for the Volvo. I love Volvo.
I should also mention my girlfriend at the time was one of the big reasons we moved out is she was invited to dance with Ort's Theater of Dance, which was Annie Bunker's modern dance company and aerial group. And so it was really those two factors. And because I worked with Ort's Theater of Dance early on, I really got a whole nother doorway into the community art scene in Tucson that was not really as accessible as an MFA student.
Okay, all good reasons. So before we get to taiko or Japanese drumming, which you're now involved with, let's cover some of your other Tucson arts activities from the past, because I already mentioned so many of them, and I think our audience should know. Let's start with the 90s.
There's a lot.
You talked about being involved with the Poetry Festival and the Poetry Center. Let us know a little bit more about those places, what they are and what your function was there.
You know, I came out of Richmond, Virginia, also. That's where I lived before I came to Tucson. I had started an artist cooperative there called the Ramcat Gallery. So I was always interested in community arts, bringing community artists together in spaces. So my interest in the Tucson Poetry Festival actually came out of my directing the, among other things, literary arts series, which was something that we did in, through the MFA program, but also combined a lot of local artists and performing artists in it. The Tucson Poetry Festival was a much more well-established, reputable event. But we often would have Nobel Prize-winning poets reading alongside well-known local published poets. It was really a celebration of all levels of poetry. At the same time I was working at the Poetry Festival, I was invited to be on the volunteer committee. I ended up the treasurer, and then I ended up the executive director. And that was one of those curse of competency issues. You know, I knew how to run events, and I knew how to direct people, and I wasn't scared by walking around with wads of money in my pockets. So I ended up the treasurer, and then the director was leaving, and he said, "You should be the director next year." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Meanwhile, like almost simultaneously, I was hired at the Poetry Center close to the end of my MFA studies. It was a grant project that was going to be focused on the 30th anniversary of the Poetry Center. So the Poetry Center was founded in 1963, and this was 93. We wanted to design an exhibit that would highlight a lot of the contents and the activities that had happened over 30 years. And since I had an architectural degree, I was invited to design the actual cases that this exhibit would travel around to. So we went to 10 different cities, and I would set up this huge exhibit of 10 cases, and then we would have a reading and some panel discussions and other events associated with it. So we ended up like in Yuma and Bisbee and all these places I'd never been, and driving around doing that really made me fall in love with the state even more. That position was a grant-funded position that only going to last a year, but I did well at it. And so the director at the time created a position called the events coordinator so that I could run the reading series and the newsletter. There was something going on in the 90s there where poetry became a much more noticed thing. And so the Poetry Center grew tremendously over the next 10 years.
The history of that place was so long and so interesting. Thank you for that background. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering, the Poetry Center is still going strong. Are you still writing poetry and involved there at all?
Well, every now and then I'll sit down and try to write some haiku. And I used to try to write at least one poem a year. After I graduated from the MFA program in 92, I did have a writing group that met every month for 10 years almost. And we published a few things. But once I started Tycho, I didn't really have time for anything else. Tycho kind of uses all of me in a way that no art form ever has before. And so I build the drums, I teach the classes, I perform, and I have to study. So I don't really have a lot of time for other stuff.
Okay, and we want to hear more about Tycho, but the one thing we have to cover a little bit, because I'm so fascinated, I did not know that you are a co-founder of Corre Press. Now, this is a place that's always fascinated me. Tell us what it is, where did the idea come from, and why did you and Lisa decide to start it? Lisa Bowden was the other co-founder,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, Lisa Bowden. So Corre is the daughter of Demeter, Persephone. The Corre and the heads, these beautiful sculptures that were made of Corre, and we like the story of Persephone and Roman and Greek names for the same daughter of Demeter. Back in 92, Lisa and I had been talking about doing letterpress printing, which, if people don't know what that is, it's you actually set each letter in the old style with lead type, and you have to set it backwards, which is where a lot of the sayings like watch your P's and Q's, and that comes from letterpress printing. Leading, typeface, font, all those words come from letterpress printing. It also restricted the length of what we were going to be publishing, because you really can't publish a novel as a letterpress book unless you're crazy. There was a Tucson Museum of Art exhibit on the Guerrilla Girls. It was arts activism for women artists. So they would send out postcards or take out big ads that would have the statistics for how many women artists were in the galleries, which was very low compared to men. And they would do these things anonymously in the beginning. So they would wear these gorilla head masks. And so the name stuck as Guerrilla Girls, but spelled like gorilla, like a military gorilla. So the exhibit was at the Tucson Museum of Art. Lisa and I were both there. We had been talking about wanting to start a feminist press. And Allison Deming, who was the current director at the Poetry Center, was on the panel. And after several of the panelists had spoken, she came out and ended her talk with this 10-point piece. It was a manifesto called Girls in the Jungle, How to Survive as a Woman Artist. Lisa and I heard this 10-point manifesto, and we're just like, we looked at each other and it was like, wow, that's our first piece. So our first piece from Corre Press was a broadside called, which was Allison Deming's Girls in the Jungle, How to Survive as a Woman Artist. We actually have one framed. It's up in the Rhythm Industry Performance Factory if you ever want to see it.
Well, that's a wonderful project. It's still going strong today, too.
Yes.
But let's get to your current arts venture that takes up all your time, Tycho. Which is, again, Japanese drumming. About 22 years ago, you co-founded Odaiko Sonora. And that is Tucson's Japanese Ensemble Drumming Group. And you yourself play a taiko drum and other instruments. Now take us from the beginning. Japanese drumming is not exactly a common interest. How on earth did you get interested in that?
I saw Kodo perform at Centennial Hall in 92. I also saw the Kronos Quartet at the Temple of Scottish Rite. And this woman came out, she was a performance artist and played a single taiko drum with kind of a dance movement thing. So, but it was Kodo really in 92 at Centennial Hall. All I can say is I had a religious experience. It was so physical. It was so invigorating. It was so engaging. The whole audience was just, you know, silent unless they were screaming out of happiness. It was just an amazing art form. I thought, whatever that is, I didn't even really know what it was. Whatever that is, I want to do it. So I immediately started looking for a taiko teacher in Tucson. There was no such thing. You know, in order to study taiko back then, you had to go somewhere. You had to find a teacher in person. And then you had to have drums and you had to have a repertoire. There was a group up in Phoenix that Esther Vandekar had started in the 80s. I was in the MFA program at that time, working at the Poetry Center. I didn't have time to drive up to Phoenix and back three times a week. So I kind of put that idea on the back burner. And 10 years later, I met Rome Hamner at the food conspiracy anniversary of Shindig. Anywho, I bumped into Rome. We started talking. She had been in Japan. She mentioned that she had studied kendo and had a kendo teacher. And then she said, my taiko teacher. And I just like, stop right there. Stop. Just stop talking. Tell me about the taiko teacher. And apparently this gentleman, Stanley Morgan, had moved to Tucson. He had a tiny little taiko group in his apartment, which was Rome and this woman, Cheryl, and Mr. Morgan. I asked Rome for his information and I kind of courted him till he allowed me to come to his apartment. He started talking to me and then he started showing me a little bit of taiko. This is very Japanese. I had to get to know him. He had to invite me over. We had to talk a lot. Then he began to show me things after a while. And then eventually he invited me to play a simple beat with the other players. Only 8 months later, he had a heart attack and a stroke and crashed his car all at the same time. I was hooked by that time. I guess working that hard, this is something I noticed or I realize is when you work that hard and you're very obsessed about something and you devote many hours a day to it, you actually get kind of addicted to it. Both Rome and I were taiko baka, as they say, we're crazy about taiko. So he was not able to play for a couple years and we founded Odaiko Sonora in 2002. So basically we could continue playing. That's all we wanted was to continue playing taiko. Of course, that meant a whole lot of things. We had to learn to build the drums and then build the drums. And we had to learn more songs and more skills. Then we had to recruit people. Then we had to teach them. Taiko is not poetry. You need a lot of space and a lot of big instruments and a lot of people. And you make a lot of noise. So it's not an easy art form to launch or maintain. Nobody wants to be your neighbor.
That's a great history of how all this started. And I think for our audience, we should play some music so they know what it is we're talking about, what kind of music. Aspen, what have we got?
Well, today we have a song that demonstrates taiko. It's written by Aki Takahashi, and the song is called Mochizuki. Yes. And I'm going to ask you, Karen, to tell us more about it. And of course, correct my pronunciation.
That was very good. One of the programs we do is we've done a lot of school programs, and taiko is really great in elementary school because it teaches the kids a lot of discipline. You know, taiko is a martial art, so there's a lot of etiquette and discipline involved in it, and it's great for kids, especially when they're having a little trouble in class and it's very physical. So I always tell my kids, if you pronounce Japanese just like Spanish, it's pretty much correct. It's same vowel sounds, same soft consonant sounds. So,
sorry, Karen, that's not going to help me.
All right. Well, you know, Duolingo next week. But anyway.
Good to know.
Yeah, it makes it sound like you know Japanese and people will speak more Japanese to you and you'll be like, what? So Aki Takahashi is a Japanese-Canadian artist from Toronto. She's with a group called Nagata Shachu. She's mostly known as a solo artist, you know, outside of Nagata Shachu because she plays an amazing shamisen and vocals. She knows like 10,000 folk songs. And she also plays all kinds of other experimental and folk music. Amazing artist. And she wrote this piece, Mochizuki, which is about a mochizuki, spelled a little differently, is a rice pounding ceremony. The Japanese use that at the beginning of the year. That's their celebration, is a mochizuki. And they pound the rice and then they eat the rice. And it's sort of celebrating the harvest, bounty of the harvest and the coming of the winter and spring. The mochizuki is a community ritual that people gather together and pound the rice together. Her play on the words is mochizuki with a Z instead of a TS because she's invoking the moon. Japanese people love wordplay. And she wrote this piece for the Herbeat concert, which was in Minnesota, which was the first all-women international taiko concert. And they made a wonderful documentary out of it called Finding Herbeat. Till a certain point, taiko was really seen as mostly men played it and men especially mm-hmm. performed it. There could be community groups with women leading and teaching and playing, but for the professional groups, it was almost always all men. So this was trying to balance that out a little bit with decades of well-known women taiko artists coming together for the concert and then filming it in a documentary, which has been screened all over the world now. This particular performance is done at the Arizona Matsuri up in Phoenix in February. It's every February. It's actually the largest or the oldest, I'm not sure which, Japanese cultural festival in the United States. And the people performing it are a combination of my group, Odaiko Sonora, and the Phoenix group, Fushisho Daiko. We have a project, a collaborative project. We call the I-10 project because that's the highway we have to drive when we want to practice together.
All right. So let's give a listen to Mochizuki by Aki Takahashi. Thank you. 91.3 KXCI Tucson. You're listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, and we're returning to our interview with the amazing Karen Falkenstrom.
Yay.
Well, that was certainly the most different kind of music we've ever had on our show, I think. And it was really enjoyable. But it brings up a lot of questions that I want to ask you. Now, I've seen you play taiko a bit, and I notice it seems to take a lot of strength. The way you stand, your feet are wide apart, the way you swing your arms to hit the sticks to the drum. It looks hard, is it? Does it take a lot of strength?
Well, I like to call it a stealth workout because you don't even know you're getting in shape. And the funny thing is, the longer you play, the less muscle you use. When you're starting off, you're usually tight and you're not sure what to do and you're using muscle to hit the drum. And as you get better, you start incorporating more aspects of Asian martial arts, like Tai Chi, for instance, where you're using the engagement and the relaxation of different parts of your body. You don't need as much strength. And I actually used to have bigger muscles. There's good cardiac, gentle cardiac, great flexibility, good toning, but not like super muscular. You don't need a lot of muscles. And you use your whole body, not just your arms.
And it's very interesting to watch. It's very graceful. I've also noticed, and we heard in the songs, that taiko drummers, they kind of yell. What are they? Why are they yelling?
What are they yelling about? Oh, God, it could be a lot of things. Some songs have the yells written in, and they're called kakegoi or kiais. Is the same thing you would use in martial arts when you're striking. You might go, hey. Kakegoi is more like a chant that goes with the song. But oftentimes we just do vocalizations to inspire each other, root for each other, share energy, and show that we're working as a team. If you think about it, taiko and Japanese folk are very much like the blues. And so they were work songs. So they were digging, or they were pulling in fishing nets, or they were pulling rice and heaving large bushels of rice into carts. I hate to bring up the idea of the chain gang, but there is a way that when we vocalize together, our bodies move together. That is very much part of traditional Japanese folk, which taiko is a part of. So much of it comes from work songs, from communities that are not trained musicians who chant together, who yell together so that they time things together. That sometimes I'm just yelling because everybody's slowing down. And I'll be like, for God's sakes, get up with the beat.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Thanks for explaining that. And it does. It makes more sense to listen to it then. Tell us about your own Odaiko Sonora group. How many people play in that?
Odaiko Sonora has several levels. You know, there's no one way to form a taiko group. And what we figured out works best in Tucson, because we don't have a large community of Japanese or Japanese American folks, or a lot of people who are really familiar with Japanese culture. The main body of it is the community group, which is a dues paying group, almost like a bowling club. And they come every week. We all work together. Better players help, more challenged players sound good. The whole point is that we have fun together and sound good. In order to get into the community group, you can take a series of classes, which we call all ages recreational taiko. So you take like 3 to 6 of those units, class units, which are 3 to 6 weeks long, and you learn enough to get into the community group if you so desire. You don't have to. The community group usually performs 3 to 5 times a year. Within the community group, there's a segment of players, you know, who really want to focus on playing better and hone their performance skills and dedicate a little bit more of their life to taiko. And so we have a performing ensemble, and there's an understudies practice for people who are working to become performing ensemble members. And the performers do most of the gigs, like 50 a year. Our job is to also be the marketing wing for the group, because, you know, as an arts nonprofit, we don't really have that 12% of our budget set aside for advertising marketing. What we have is we can go out there and play, make people happy, and make people want to do it and show them that they can do it too. Because I often say this, people might be sick of it, but if you can count to 4 and hit something with a stick, I can teach you a taiko song.
All right, that's good to know. And it's no wonder. I mean, this is quite an elaborate organization with all kinds of things going on, and very fascinating. What do you see or hope for the future of Odaiko Sonora?
Ah, well, that's a good question. Since we have survived some various changes, I mean, we're 22 years old now, and the structure that I just described really was an evolution from lots of failed attempts at organizational structure. We were in a really good position now organizationally. Since we have survived the pandemic, I will say very well, I am now looking at succession planning. I'm the executive director. There's an artistic director and an assistant director, and some other volunteers who have been with the group for a long time are taking on other tasks, everything from costume maintenance to drum repair to writing grants, reporting on grants, QuickBooks. So we're kind of parsing out those pieces of the work that needs to be done to run the group. And I'm backing away from it more and more because I need a vacation. I've been doing this 22 years. I want to keep playing and I love teaching. But I mean, as anyone who runs an arts organization knows, doing all the marketing, all the communications, all the accounting, all the drum building, all the drum fixing, it's a little too much. And I want to go camping more.
Well, it sounds to me like you deserve a break, a long break. Tell us where people can learn more about Udaiko Sonora and the many activities run at the Rhythm Industry Performance Factory. Where do they go to find that out?
Yeah, our website is tucsontaiko.org. Taiko is spelled T-A-I-K-O. Udaiko actually means big honored drum. So taiko means drum. Udaiko is like the big honored drum. So tucsontaiko.org, we are a nonprofit. So if you go there, there's a nice website. There's a mailing list. You can just send an email to info@tucsontaiko.org. And our assistant director, who's amazing, Ishani, will answer that email. We just started a new class that these students will be, many of them, their first performance will be at Tucson Meet Yourself. So we're gearing this class towards a performance at Tucson Meet Yourself. And we'll be there on Saturday, the first Saturday in October at 3 o'clock on the church stage. We'll be performing there.
Okay,
and there's about,
great.
There's about going to be 25 people or something performing, I think.
That sounds great. We'll look forward to that. And we really appreciate you coming by to talk about it. Obviously, we could talk about this for a much longer time, but we are out of time, I think. Right, Aspen?
Well, as I always say, we've come to the close of our show. And so quickly, Karen. Yeah. But Karen Falkenstrom, thank you so much for coming by to tell us about your amazing life and the things that you do to make this a better community for all of us. I now remember you from the days of Orch Theater of Dance as we were the company chiropractic office.
Oh, my God. I was a poet. I didn't get the chiropractic benefits.
Oh, but you were there.
Yeah, I was there. And I just want to thank you, Aspen and Kathy, for carrying on this great tradition. I love Broad Perspectives Radio. I've been listening for decades back from when Susie B used to do it. And I just, you know, I'm so grateful that y'all are doing this for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Aspen Green with my co-host, Kathy Harris, and you've been listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. You can hear more of our shows at kxci.org on our Broad Perspectives Radio page. But for now, stay tuned, because next up we have Boom Goddess Radio with Jennifer Davis Page. Enjoy your Sunday, and we'll see you next week.